This is All Things Peoria. I'm Daniel Musisi. Bradley University has hired on Dr. Warren Anderson as the institution's first vice president of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Tim Shelley spoke with Anderson about his background and how he hopes to work not only on the Hilltop, but in the wider Peoria community.
Looking at the opportunity at Bradley, this is one that really got me excited. The commitment of the university, the time, the resources they're putting into making sure that whoever was selected for this position was going to be successful. The opportunity to work with the leadership team to make sure that EDI is really infused into every aspect of the institution is something that anyone in this position would really kill for. So I'm excited to come and work with the president to make sure that we are really cultivating an environment of cultural competence, both on the university campus and in the greater Peoria area. So I'm really excited about the opportunity.
Tell me a little bit about how you plan to do that. You are the first person to fill this position, so you're blazing the trail, so to speak.
So that's one of the exciting parts, is being the inaugural. This isn't the first time I've had to do that. Really coming in, making myself known from the beginning, meeting with students, faculty, staff on campus, but also making sure that Bradley's presence around this critical topic is felt in the community. I know the city just hired its first chief diversity officer, so absolutely partnering with her to make sure that we are building that bridge both on and off the Bradley campus, making sure that I'm touching base and communicating effectively with our corporate partners, corporate sponsors, all the local community businesses, community-based organizations, and individuals who really truly believe in this work and want to work together to really build this concept of true equity, diversity, and inclusion in the greater Peoria area. That's the exciting part about this. You're right, there is no blueprint, there is no path, but having done this in multiple areas and at multiple institutions, I know about the opportunity that awaits us, and just identifying those critical partners that can really help us succeed in this arena is probably the most exciting part.
So having walked this path at other institutions, tell me a little bit about starting out, basically where you're starting out at right now, and then I don't know how long, a year, 2 years, 3 years, where are you taking us compared to where we are right now?
So basically what I'm doing right now is just doing a lot of research, really reading up on what's happening at the institution, looking at what the opportunities are external to the organization. The president and I are going to be meeting with a number of constituents over the course of the next couple of months, even prior to me coming on board. We're going to be looking to set up meetings, set up some listening sessions, both on and off campus, to make sure that we are really hitting the appropriate tone for everything that we need to have done. The next step is going to be really laying out a plan of action for the next 3, 6, 9 months. I hate to talk about strategic planning because I usually don't like to do that right off the bat. Just making sure that we are getting the appropriate information to build a path forward. The one thing I don't want to do, because this is inaugural and this is us really setting the path for who may come in the next iteration of this, hopefully 5, 10 years down the road, making sure that they know what steps we took to ensure that we are really building a plan that incorporates every aspect of where we need to go, both on and off campus, making sure that the individuals that are going to partner with us have a good understanding of where the university wants to go, both as it relates to the students, but also the employees as well. Mainly making sure that they understand that our goal is not to just ensure that people understand the principles and value the principles of equity, diversity, and inclusion while they're on campus. Unless you are a hermit, you tend to venture out in some aspects out in your world. So whether or not a student decides that they want to go downtown to a restaurant, or they want to go see a show, or our faculty and staff that live out in the community, I want to make sure that it's a community that truly values every single member of our institution, and that our institution truly values what it means to be a part of the Peoria community, and how we can really build a lasting partnership around this work. And I think we have some of the tremendous building pieces in place to do just that.
And hitting on something a little bit more fundamental, can you just tell me a little bit more about the value of, diversity, equity, and inclusion work?
Well, ultimately, our goal is to make sure that every student that comes to Bradley leaves there with more than just a degree. that they have the tool set to be able to thrive in any workplace they go into, making sure that whoever's a part of the Bradley community understands that it's each of our jobs to not only truly live by the values of the institution as it relates to equity, diversity, and inclusion, but also making sure that we are a part of the change that's happening in society.
That's Dr. Warren Anderson speaking to Tim Shelley about what he hopes to accomplish as Bradley University's first Vice President of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. And in 9 minutes on All Things Peoria, you'll hear about a new higher education push to land IT workforce development training in Greater Peoria. This is All Things Peoria. I'm Daniel Musisi. More than 100,000 Americans died from a drug overdose between April 2020 and April 2021. According to the CDC, three-quarters of opiate overdose deaths are caused by synthetic opiates such as fentanyl. Chris Schaffner is the director of Jolt Foundation, a Peoria-based harm reduction nonprofit. One of Jolt's many free services is testing street drugs for fentanyl. In a conversation with WCBU's Hannah Alani, Schaffner describes what he's seeing on the streets of Peoria. He also shares his ideas on how changes in drug policy could help Jolt expand its care.
We've reached a point where most of our people that we serve just assume fentanyl isn't everything. So we've actually had a decrease in people asking us for fentanyl test strips because they just assume it's in the substances. And that's fine because you're going to take extreme caution when using them anyway, and that's what we want, are people to take precautions to reduce harm. The problem is there are many different fentanyl analogs, and they don't tell you the potency of each one when you do a fentanyl test strip. So it just lets you know for the presence of that. But there are other synthetic opioids that are non-scheduled drugs, so they haven't been scheduled by the DEA yet as a drug of medicinal purpose. And so you can buy those online, you can buy those on the dark web. All of that, that moving and that shaping and shifting all the time of the substances that we're finding, again, is a result of drug policy, because when they hammer down on one, it's like sticking your finger in the dam. You plug up one hole and another one pops up on the other side. And that is the predictable result of poor drug policy. The other issue, too, is that it's not just opioids. It's a mixture of central nervous system depressants that we're finding in substances. So think if there's oxycodone and there's some heroin and maybe a little bit of fentanyl and a benzodiazepine, or an individual is taking all of those or they're all pressed into a pill. Now you have three, maybe possibly four different drugs that had caused respiratory depression in one batch, and that triples or quadruples your risk of overdose. And again, that goes back to not being able to know the content and the purity and the adulterants that are in the substances, which is why we so strongly encourage people to get to test their substances.
The fentanyl test strips that you use, how much does one of those cost?
Now, they're about a dollar a strip, a little over a dollar a strip. And we serve anywhere between 500, 700 people a month at Jolt. And some of those are return patients. Others are first-time users of our services. So we go through quite a bit of them. You know, in just a couple of months, we can go through an entire supply. And up until recently, you could not purchase fentanyl test strips with federal dollars. That's changed recently. But our grant funding didn't allow us to purchase fentanyl test strips. And so a lot of that would come out of our own pockets.
When did that change?
Just in the last year.
Wow. Can people, can anyone just go buy one? And where do you buy a fentanyl test strip?
So we buy them from BTNX. They're the manufacturers. We order them in bulk online. I'm not sure if the average citizen can just go online and order them, but as a nonprofit public health organization, we can order them in bulk. The most effective way to tell what's in substances that are illicitly bought and sold on the streets is mass spectrometer. It's through a mass spectrometer. Unfortunately, those can cost tens of thousands of dollars, but they're extremely accurate.
How would it change what you do if Jolt Foundation was able to afford one of those?
I think it would just give us a very, very accurate understanding of what's happening on the streets with the drug supply. And with the drug supply, it's changing so rapidly that when we test a sample, let's say today, in 3 weeks, that might be an obsolete sample. So we want all of our services to be free to everybody, right? So there's no financial barrier to them accessing these life-saving tools that they need. But there's a cost to us. And the way we're funded is when we do testing, HIV, Hep C, STI testing, and some harm reduction services, we're reimbursed once we deliver that service to the individuals. But we bill at the end of the month, and we just get reimbursed for what services we delivered. So there's not a stockpiling of cash flow that's coming in. Most of that comes through private donations. And that's something we are looking for to grow is our donor base, people who can join us in monthly recurring donations. If we can predict the donations that are coming in every month and we can track that, then we can maybe budget for something a lot larger scale than that. But we just don't have the donor funding for that yet.
You're listening to an interview with Chris Schaffner, the director of Jolt Foundation, on all things Peoria. Jolt Foundation is a Peoria-based harm reduction services nonprofit.
What are some key drug policies that you think are allowing this problem to continue getting worse and worse every year?
I think the criminalization of drugs and drug use continue to drive people underground into less and less safe practices and using drugs that are less and less predictable. So take fentanyl. Fentanyl's the big conversation, right? Is that fentanyl's such a demon drug that it's so powerful and it's killing people. But fentanyl is a very effective medication at managing acute pain, right? It's used every day in hospital settings without problem. Why? The purity of the drug is known. The dosages are managed and effective for each individual. And then there's all the medical monitoring that goes on when someone is given a substance like fentanyl. They're monitored by trained staff. All of those controls are gone on the streets. I would personally love to see, and I know Jolt would support, safe consumption sites. These are overdose prevention sites. They exist in Canada and in Europe and around the world. Overdose deaths plummet when there's a place where people can be medically monitored, have their substances tested, and be taken care of. That doesn't hurt anyone. That person doesn't go out in the community and use and discard syringes in places that others might find them. If they're able to purchase drugs legally, there's less of a risk of a black market. And if someone were to experience an overdose, there's someone there right away to reverse that overdose. And then what we find is that people who come into harm reduction programs and safe consumption sites are literally five times more likely to seek treatment of their own.
And are there any state or local legislators whose work in particular we should be looking at?
I think here locally, we need to push our city council to remove the ordinance that was enacted several years ago that prevents mobile distribution of harm reduction services. That prevents us from going out on the streets and meeting people where they're at. It prevents us from delivering supplies to people who have transportation barriers to getting to our services. We're unable to do that because of the ordinance that exists in the city of Peoria.
It would obviously help you reach more people if you could physically go to them. What's the takeaway message here for the community, people who are listening to this?
Well, I would think one is that we just need to continue to challenge the public narrative that drug users are bad people, right? It's much more complicated. It's much more nuanced than that. So my first call to action would just simply be is if you hear people running down people who are struggling with substance use, call that out, challenge that. There's an awful lot more going on in that person's life that we probably don't even know about that has led them to the point where this is occurring. And so to judge someone on their current present circumstances without thinking about the process that led them there is really, really harmful. And so get to know them. Get to know their stories. Be a friend to them. Like, they're not contagious, you know. So love them and give them unconditional positive regard. So that's what I'd say in an interpersonal level. As far as helping Jolt, we are at the end of our year, and so we have an end-of-the-year fundraising campaign. You can donate by going to joltfoundation.org. There's a donate button right there you can click, or you can mail checks or whatever you want or cash to our Peoria office at 1411 Northeast Adams Street. Those checks can be made payable to Jolt Foundation. Like I said earlier, we're grant-funded for certain things, but only specific things. And so everything else we do is an out-of-pocket expense. And so donations are really helpful, particularly this time of year.
That's Chris Schaffner, director of Peoria's Jolt Foundation, speaking with WCBU's Hannah Alani. You can find more of their conversation at wcbu.org.
Thank you.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, but maybe not if you're buying a partridge. That's going to be more expensive this year. 5 golden rings, the price tag might make your Christmas blue.
Inflation is certainly alive and well as it's measured by the Christmas price index.
But not every one of the gifts from the 12 days of Christmas is pricier. NPR's Scott Horsley will put them through his consumer price calculator on the next morning edition from NPR News.
I'm Ariel Jones. Listen weekdays from 4 until 9 a.m. on 89.9 WCBU and WCBU.org.
This is All Things Peoria. I'm Daniel Musisi. The region's three major institutions of higher learning are combining forces for a bid to land a $15 million Information Technology Workforce Development Grant. Illinois Central College President Dr. Sheila Quirk Bailey talks to WCBU's Tim Shelley about the proposed Hired IT Workforce Accelerator Project.
This is a grant that would address the regional workforce gaps in IT, and that's all the way across the spectrum, which is why we have two local universities as partners, as well as our local community-based organizations. So this is a grant available from the federal government, from the EDA, and what it's aimed at doing is to help communities develop the workforce they need as a recovery mechanism coming out of COVID. So what we currently are doing now is we have a survey out there that we'd like businesses to complete, because obviously we want to make sure that what we submit to help our region is actually the needs of the companies. But this grant would provide free certifications to students from high school, so think dual credit, and those just entering the workforce, those who have entry-level jobs currently in IT who need to upskill, as well as, which is exciting and why we have our university partners, is there may be people out there with four-year degrees who don't have the job opportunities that there are in the IT sector, so then they would use this money to retrain for free through either Bradley or Eureka. Right now, short-term, so don't think another four-year degree, but short-term training certifications in IT, so then they can enter that industry.
So when we say IT, what kind of jobs specifically are we talking about? I think a lot of people hear IT and they just think, oh, somebody who works with computers, but there's a lot to it.
You know, that's a great question. So this can cover a lot of different forms of information technology. So think in terms of basic networking, think in terms of programming languages of any different variety. Think in terms of cybersecurity, which there's a huge need for right now, making sure that from individual devices to networks, right, all remain secure. The other thing we can do with this grant is work with individual companies. So let's say they are moving from one version of a software, right, a system, to the next version. We could actually retrain current employees in the industry as long as there's a next level job that comes with that, right? So this isn't training for the new version of Word. But if they're truly changing systems and those jobs will change, we could then provide that training for free to help people qualify for those new jobs, which really can be quite an issue for companies, right? It's not just the money to do a systems conversion. It's how do you make sure to support your current employees so they have those new skill sets.
So the thing you mentioned about companies saying, I need to fill these jobs, and then you train for these jobs. If I'm at a company, how do I get involved in that process?
You know, that is why we are talking this morning. So this all needs to be built to individual company needs, and then we aggregate that to determine what programming to offer. So if you are out there and you're in the IT industry and you represent a company, we would love you to go to the ICC website and then go to the IT Workforce Summit and just type that in at the information box, the search box, and it will bring you to the page which gives you all the background on the project as well as gives you access to the survey. The interesting thing about this grant is it really is full service. So we will be working with local community-based organizations and providing wraparound services. So that could include childcare, that could include bus passes for transportation, that could include tutoring. really making sure that whatever is somebody's barrier to entering this industry, that this grant, which we would be applying for, we think right now, we haven't seen the need survey, but up to $15 million. So we could provide devices, we could provide Wi-Fi for the home, right, while people are in training. So just taking away all those things that get in the way of somebody moving forward so they can go from where they are, right, to where they'd like to be. And we have all these employers who are interested and have openings now that they can't fill. One of the things we're also looking at is if someone goes to work after they've certified for free, that then they'd make a commitment to the hiring company for at least 1 year. And then we'd also fund off the grant job coaches. So let's say you were one of those folks who had a four-year degree in liberal arts, and now you've made the transition to an IT environment. That's a very different environment. Mm-hmm. So we would have people to help you make that transition and to help you on the job as needed so you can be successful launching in a new industry.
That's ICC President Dr. Sheila Quirk-Bailey speaking with WCBU's Tim Shelley about a new IT workforce development grant. Survey responses are due by December 7th. Thanks for choosing All Things Peoria on WCBU. I'm Daniel Musisi. We had story help today from Tim Shelley and Hannah Alani. You can find all of today's stories at WCBU.org. That's also where you'll find links to subscribe to the All Things Peoria podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, or NPR One. And we want to know what you think of the show, so comment on our Facebook page. We're Peoria Public Radio. Or follow us on Twitter at WCBU Radio. This is WCBU Peoria 89.9 FM and WCBU.org, a public service of Bradley University and Illinois State University.